Nickelback.
Still as silly as before.
Yeah, thank you for coming back. Actually, welcome. We should probably introduce ourselves.
Yes, because we didn't do that last
time. Perhaps the podcast name.
Yes. So, drum roll. We are...
Babies Are No Joke. Still kind of like up in the air about if that's the name or not, mm-hmm. because, you know, we got issues about that, but we fight on our own way.
We don't have issues. I just wanted it to be right.
She and just wanted it to be more clever, basically. And I'm just like,
I have the other name that I can't let go of.
Yeah.
You know,
we can't say it though because it's a copyright issue.
Yeah. And also people will go and listen to that podcast. And we don't want you to go. Please stay with us.
Yeah, stay. Like, desperately need your numbers.
Yeah, so we can buy food for our children.
Yeah, exactly. Otherwise they'll starve.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, I'm Sarah.
I'm Maddie.
And yeah, a little bit about us, I guess. I'm in my mid-30s. I had a baby during lockdown, which I think I mentioned before. And I think it kind of reached a point in lockdown where I was like, well, what's next in the relationship? Should we just kind of raw dog it and see where we go? And
Basically, she had a kid to save her marriage. That's really what happened.
The sad thing is that I can't understand people who do have a kid to save the marriage because it's like the worst thing you could ever do. Mm-hmm. But, you know, to each your own, if you're doing that currently, good luck.
I'm still on the divorce track.
So. Yeah, definitely. You know, you might be turning a new leaf though, which is exciting. But anyway, I am a mother to a daughter, and that's a whole interesting topic because she's a girl, and that comes with its own kind of fears. I actually was walking today and I saw this girl walking down the street, and she was so sassy, and she was 7, and she swung her hips back and forth, and then she had these two boys like hanging off of her, and I was like, this girl, and I was like, that's only like 5 years away, 6 years away.
I can imagine your little one being like that. Yeah. She's already sassy now.
I'm nervous, very. But yeah, that's who I am. Oh, I'm American, if you couldn't tell. Not Canadian. Sometimes people do get confused, but no, please don't.
And please feel free to criticize her for being American. I do all the time. But she's really a Londoner, like I am. Yeah. So I'm Maddie. I'm also in my 30s and I'm a mum to a boy. So I've got a boy and a girl, which is really different. I think about that often, kind of with all the stuff that's out there now about, you know, masculinity, toxic masculinity. I think about him growing up and what that's like. And I'm really excited about our podcast and sort of getting to know you listeners a little bit more. And maybe we should say about how we met.
It was, you know, kind of you get to desperate measures at the time when you're in maternity leave. And,
COVID.
Yeah, you've reached a point where you've walked the park by yourself too many times and you think, maybe I should look more friendly.
Well, basically, I saw Sarah walking in the park a few times. I tried to wave. I tried to seduce her from the distance, but she was having none of it. And then one day, I just sort of like forced myself and went up to her. Even though she had these sunglasses and this kind of like resting bitch face, I was really desperate because there was no one else that I was trying to be friends with.
You meet a lot of parents that you just don't ever want to talk to again, but you kind of have to because you've walked with them in the park a couple times.
And then I was like, hey, I'm Maddie, be my friend. And you didn't say no. You didn't say yes, but you didn't say no.
I was just like at that point, like, ugh, who is this? And another one. But then we kind of started...
stuck around.
She stuck around. She just wouldn't go.
No.
But then she started kind of like flirting with me. And I think I really needed that at this time. She was like, oh, you're really like pretty or something. And I was like,
you were. You actually were.
I know. I must have had that post-pregnancy glow.
You were really glowing.
Yeah. And she just kept telling me. And I was just getting like more and more red and like, whoa, what is happening here? Maybe it was the tension I was desperately after having a baby. But yeah, I mean, it kind of stuck. It mm-hmm. worked.
Mm-hmm. And then I felt like you understood my crazy.
Yeah.
And my dislike for being a mom.
Yeah. And then all of a sudden we just kept talking about how much we didn't like it.
Yeah.
And they were like, actually, we're quite aligned.
Yeah. And it wasn't like that it was quite early on still in maternity leave, so we had quite a bit to go, and we were already hating it.
I imagine if we met when we were pregnant, we would have never given birth.
Yeah, no.
So do you want to tell me about your pregnancy?
Yeah, I was thinking about it the other day because it's so strange having a pregnancy in COVID times. I don't know what I expected, but I guess I didn't expect what I had experienced. I mean, I'm very lucky. It was as normal as can be pregnancy. I didn't have much morning sickness. I was sort of quite well, developing quite well. But it was really strange, and it was really hard being pregnant during COVID, working from home, being with my partner every day. And we hadn't sort of planned to be pregnant, although I don't want to sound ungrateful when I say that, because I know there's lots of women who it's really hard for them to be pregnant, but we hadn't sort of planned it to be pregnant at that time, and then we ended up being pregnant and decided to make the commitment to have a baby together. But I went from living a life of spontaneity, holidays, not really seeing my husband that much.
She sounded really fun, to be honest. And then now this person's a whole different person.
And then spending 24 hours, which was his dream, to be honest with you. He loved it. And then being pregnant. So I think I missed out. I feel like I missed out on meeting friends and sharing my bump and talking about being pregnant and kind of having all the conversations around it. I felt quite miserable with it, and I couldn't tell if it was because I was pregnant or if it was because of COVID. So it was all sort of interlinked and intertwined, and it was quite a confusing time. But then actually, and I'm skipping ahead a little bit, but the birth for me was probably the birth and the end of my pregnancy was really tough. So towards the end of my pregnancy, I ended up getting preeclampsia.
Mm.
And it felt like it came out of nowhere.
And just for people who don't know, what is preeclampsia?
Yes, that's a really good point. So preeclampsia is, they're not really sure what it is, but I think it's sort of like related to hyper blood pressure issues. And it's when the blood flow from your placenta is not going to the baby well enough, so therefore they may not be getting enough food and so forth. So it started with like my blood pressure spiking, so I felt like I was really well, doing fine. I look back now and I realize that actually I was quite unwell. I was having like blue fingernails. I was out of breath all the time, but I just kind of as I do, it's in my personality, just get on with it. But anyway, I went for my 35 week check, and they were really concerned about my blood pressure. And it was supposed to be a really joyous time because it was when my partner could come for the scan for the first time.
Wow.
And we were really excited about that. And I remember her sort of saying, "Oh, I'm really concerned about your blood pressure. I'm going to send you to the blood pressure clinic, but your partner can come with you." Another thing that I think you can relate, your experience in, having a COVID pregnancy, ended up at this blood pressure clinic. I have these two women taking my blood pressure in each arm, being really concerned. They started talking about medication. We're going to have to induce you. That's probably preeclampsia. And I just sort of was so confused. Mm. And I couldn't understand because I felt well, and I didn't know much about preeclampsia at that stage. It just sounded really serious in the way that they were talking about it, and I just remember thinking, I really want to talk to my partner. Like, I'm supposed to make this decision now about whether or not to take medication, and I don't have anyone to talk it through, and I'm having, it just felt like it was raising my blood pressure, and if anything, all these kind of like quick, you've got protein in your pee, this is happening. And I just, I kind of felt really emotional, and I felt really upset. So they sent me home with this pee bucket that I had to pee in throughout the night. Turned up in the morning with this pee bucket, and they were like, "No, you've got protein. It's, it's all looking doom and gloom. We need to get you on the medication now." And it just got worse, really, after that. I ended up in hospital. I had to constantly go in for these checks, for these blood pressure checks, blood test, and it just went downhill after that. And I kept getting these scans as well, and it just, I felt like I was really looking forward to the end of my pregnancy, because yeah. I was going to take a little bit of annual leave so that I could get the flat ready and, you know, like nest, as they call it, and kind of enjoy that time off. And I just felt like I spent it in hospital, and then my baby came, you know. So it was yeah. just kind of like this rush of everything in this kind of, felt like a really chaotic world. But so it just got worse and worse, and I ended up getting help.
Mm-hmm.
So HELLP syndrome is when a number of things that are really important go wrong, basically. So for example, like my iron was down, my enzymes were down, I had protein in my pee, and they were showing me like the graphs, and that the trend was basically that everything was just decreasing and not going the right way that it should be, even though I was on the medication. And so for weeks, there were, not weeks, you know, it was already at the 35 weeks, but they were sort of saying, we're going to have to, we're not sure about inducing, and they kept changing their minds every day. And I just felt like I was living in this limbo world of just going to the hospital every day to have a blood pressure check. Oh, we don't know, let's wait. And I can see that from their perspective, they didn't want to induce if they didn't yeah. have to, and they wanted me to go to at least 37 weeks as close as possible. But just kind of living in this unknown, it was really, really frustrating. And I just kept thinking, if it's really this bad, just take this baby out of yeah. me. Like, I just can't live like this anymore. And then one day they were like, no, like, that's it. Like, we're going to have to induce you, come back tomorrow with your stuff. And I remember going home that night, and I was so scared about being induced because I heard all of the horror stories. So I was like Googling, you know, YouTube, how to induce naturally, finding myself in all of these positions, and, you know, kind of like, please, baby, please come out. And I had a sweep in the morning already, and she had said to me that I was 1 centimeter dilated. So I was kind of hopeful that maybe I wouldn't have to be induced. And actually, he came that night morning, basically. Amazing. So, yeah, that was kind of a big relief that we kind of skipped that part, because I have heard from so many women how difficult going through the being induced stage is. But it was really strange. I sort of, when we went to bed, we packed our bags kind of ready to go. And in the night, I felt like I was getting contractions, but I wasn't sure if they were or not, because having never had contractions before, I just was like, I don't know. Like, yeah. they don't hurt that much. You know, like, what is this? And I kind of just sort of fell back asleep. And then around 5 a.m., it got worse and felt kind of quite strong. And I remember, I think, no, this is like contractions. And I remember messaging my best friend being like, what's contractions? What do they feel like? What should I expect? She's a training midwife. And then sort of trying to time, like, as they do in the movies, to see, like, oh, is this a thing? Is this not a thing? And then sort of half an hour later, I was like, no, this is a thing. You know, if you've had a baby, you'll know what I'm talking about. And I remember waking up my husband, I'm having contractions, the baby's coming. And he was like, what? And he said to me afterwards that I was so calm that he just was like, there's no way that this is the real thing. She's not going through labor. Like, she doesn't seem in pain. Again, because of what you see, what you hear. So, you know, in a taxi to the hospital. And then again, another COVID kind of experience that some people might relate, but he couldn't come into the ward with me, which I found really, really frustrating. And I know lots of women were also going through it at the time, but I found it really difficult because it's sort of like I was left in this cubicle to basically continue opening, expanding. So I turned up 4 centimeters dilated. And so I had to obviously get to 9 on my own. And I just kind of remember pacing this room, feeling like an animal, pressing the bell, wanting water, wanting just connection, wanting support. And I was thinking like, but, you know, my partner is not here, so you have to sort somehow be my partner. And I know it's a lot to ask for you, but of you, but I'm, you know, this is my first time and I just need a bit of help and a bit of support.
An arm around the shoulder.
Yeah, just, you know, like, you're doing okay. And I also remember, like, I kept ringing the bell because I was saying to them, like, he's coming, like, I know it. It's coming, it's more dilated than you think. And they wouldn't listen. And then at some point they finally checked and they were like, oh, wow, no, you're 9 centimetres dilated. And I was like, see, I fucking told you. Like, I know that I was ready to go. And then, you know, off we went into the labour room and I met my husband sort of halfway and I was like, I'm about to have a baby. And he was like, yes, I know. I've been waiting outside.
And you didn't have any, like, epidural or anything like that?
No. Okay. Up until that point, I was just on gas and air.
Wow.
And then we got into the room and then I don't remember because time, I don't know if that's how you felt, but the time was such a blur. Like, I can't tell you how long, you know, it was just, for me, it felt like hours, but also, like, really quick at the same time. But when we got into the labour room, I remember feeling really strange and, like, really isolated, but there was lots of people there and I just sort of felt like being being watched and looked at and just sort of like it just was such a strange experience. I've just never been through anything like it, and you're just kind of these people that are strangers that are going to bring in, you know, help you bring your baby to the world. You've got no connection to them. They're going, you can do it. And then you sort of feel so removed from
reality. You don't even know who half of them are.
No, you're just sort of there in the room. I just remember feeling really alone. And then I started getting really tired. And my waters broke sort of even more in the labour room. And there was poo. In my waters, and they were really concerned about that, the meconium, and they decided that they wanted to check the baby's heart rate. And then they sort of, after that, it got a bit, not tricky, you know, I mean, in my experience, like, it was a bit tricky, but they were sort of starting to say, oh, if to my husband, kind of quietly, if she doesn't push, then we're going to have to intervene, like, if she can't. She's starting to get tired and we're worried about the baby's heart rate. And I was thinking, I can do it. And I remember like pushing and it wasn't hurting, but it just felt like nothing is happening. Why is nothing happening? Like, yeah. I'm just doing all of this effort. And it just felt like they were sort of just standing, talking, waiting for me. And I'm just like, now? Is it coming out? I don't remember, but and my husband told me afterwards that she was saying to him, okay, I'm going to give her one more chance. I'm going to cut her. And then if this doesn't work, then it might be that we have to intervene with the suction cup or forceps. So they cut me. I sort of don't remember agreeing to anything, but I had said to my husband, you are my advocate. Like, you sign for things. You sign that needs to be done. So she cut me. And then it was like one big push. And then, he came.
Amazing.
And all of that was like an hour and 26
minutes. So mine was very different. my pregnancy was great, like, as the books go. I couldn't have asked for a better one. I just wish that I had enjoyed it more. I don't know if a lot of, like, the perspective is that you should enjoy it because you are about to give birth and everything is beautiful. And I just wasn't in that mindset. To me, it was just like, all I'm doing here is sitting and getting bigger every day. And I'm getting more and more uncomfortable. And I got really bad gas. I can't really sleep. And I've got heartburn that won't stop. So it just kept feeling kind of like I was already getting into kind of a weird negative headspace with it. And maybe I was just some kind of, I didn't feel like my body was my own anymore, which I thought was quite strange, because it wasn't, nothing was going wrong with the pregnancy thus far. It was a very,
but your body kind of isn't textbook. Yours
no anymore. Exactly. Yeah, it was the first time where I felt like, okay, there's a parasite eating me. Like, literally everything I do and consume Like, I was starving. I've never been so hungry in my life. Like, I was hungry all the time. And it was because, yeah, there was this little being that I was just trying to, like, raise and get bigger and all of that kind of stuff. I'm very fortunate that it all went well pregnancy-wise. I kind of got to the end and, you know, I was like, had this whole birth plan because, of course, you talk to all these midwives and things and they say, oh my gosh, yes, go for a natural water birth.
I mean,
all
I was going to have a home birth.
Yeah, were you? Yeah. No, I was going to have a natural water birth in the pool. I wasn't even going to take gas and air. I would maybe consider it at the end. Well, literally, it was like the day of one of my, I had many baby showers because they were all virtual, so I could literally have it with like different pockets of friends. So it was like my New York friends, my friends from work, my friends from book club, my friends from wherever. And I was getting ready for my baby shower and I was like, oh, I just don't really feel well, and like, I don't know, something just feels really like upset. So I was like, I called the hospital. Mm-hmm. I was already at, you know, full term, so it was okay, but they were like, okay, you should come in. And so I went in and they were like, okay, you're having like early signs of like labor or whatever. And I was like, this is what it feels like. It's awful. And then like they, you know, test your blood pressure and stuff because you're sat in the mm-hmm. hospital. So they tested my blood pressure and it turns out my blood pressure was like through the roof and it was like skyrocketing. And I naturally have high blood pressure anyway. And it is weird to me now on reflection that during my pregnancy, I wasn't probably monitored more closely mm-hmm. for my high blood pressure. But I never got preeclampsia, which I feel very fortunate about, especially after hearing about your journey with that. And I, I had high blood pressure and it wasn't good. So they were like, okay, we're going to induce you today. That was a Sunday. And I was like, I'm not ready. Like, I literally don't have anything with me. My husband's walking around outside because he can't come in with me. So I'm going to go if that's okay. Mm. And they were like, okay, if you don't come in now, you can be able to come in on Tuesday. Because mind you, again, it was COVID times, they were short staffed, so there was a lot of kind of looking for availability of time. So I'm like, you know, go home
Sunday
night.
And that's the thing, because you also don't know whether they wanted to induce you on that day because of the risk or actually because of the staff thing issues.
And so they were like, so I was like, okay, this is a bit weird that they're like, okay, you can't actually go home. Because, you know, I was like, I protested a little bit by saying, oh, I don't have anything with me. And then they were like, okay, fine, you go home and come in on Tuesday and we'll call you when there's a bed available for you. So obviously in the meantime, they did a sweep then before I left. And then in the meantime, I was like, gonna drink that raspberry leaf tea. I'm gonna have sex. I'm gonna try to get this baby coming on her own because I just do not want to have to go through that, through the induction, because, you know, we do all these antenatal classes and they are like, induction is bad. Don't do it. It's traumatic. It's not what anybody should be going through, blah, blah, blah. And I'm like, okay, yeah, definitely not going to go for that. You know, in my mind, it was like this massive, crazy deal. And then I call them on Tuesday because I don't get a phone call all day. And they said, wait till Tuesday. We'll call you when we have a bed free. I call them and they're like, unsure that you're going to get a bed today. Maybe we'll call you tomorrow. And I was like, okay.
At this point, you were telling me
I
needed to come in.
That it was all high risk and that I needed to come in. So, you know, this is now day three after you've said I need to come in. So, of course, you know, I try the whole raspberry leaf tea again, try to have sex to just get the thing moving, and it wasn't happening on its own. So then on the Wednesday, they're like, you know, we call them at maybe like 4 o'clock and are like, hey, like, you told us to come in. So is there a bed available? And then they were like, oh, God, let me call you back. You know, like, you're like, who am I even speaking to? And then finally they had a bed and they were like, okay, you can come in now. So we made our way to the hospital. I had my hospital bag with me. Obviously my husband couldn't come in with me, or he came in to drop me off and he knew where I was. And then obviously visiting hours were done, which we were only there for like 10 minutes of the visiting hours. And then he left. I got my old, they put in the pessary, which is kind of like an insert that they put in side vaginally. And then it's meant to start contractions. So it started contractions and I was like, oh my God, it's so painful. Like, again, this person who thought she was going to do it all naturally. I was like, no, I need the codeine now. So they were like, pressing the button. I was like, I need it now. They're like, Mom, are you sure? Because, it's not really that far along. And I was like, no, you don't understand. They were like, okay, whatever. They were like, let's just shut her up.
Drug her up.
Here, just give her the drugs and she'll be fine. So then I was like, okay, yeah. Like, just, you know, I watched a series of some TV show. I was kind of just waiting for things to happen. Then it got to the Thursday morning at like 11 o'clock. And I was going to the bathroom. And then all of a sudden it was like this gush of water into the toilet. And I was like, what? And I was like, I think my water's broke. And so I like slammed the door open. I didn't even have time to put my underwear on. Slammed the door open and I'm like, my water isn't broken. There's no, I'm no one's listening to me besides the other girls on the ward. And they're like, okay. And then I'm like, I didn't flush the toilet. I was like, oh my God. Then I like, I had one little like, you know, piece of like toilet paper that I carried with me. It was like a light pink, if anything, like, or there was like no color at all. And I was like, ladies, my water broke. Because I thought that was it. I was like, that's going to be the moment. It's going to start coming. You know, like in the movies when it's like the water breaks and you have to rush and get in the car. I was like, wow. Turns out it's not like that. And I had to, they were like, okay, yeah, no, we'll come and check on you, blah, blah, blah. And they were like, okay, you're not really like that far dilated or anything like that. But good thing your water's broke. Like, you know, we'll try to find a bed available for you on the labor ward. Get to like Friday morning. Granted, it's now been 24 hours, and they tell you after 24 hours, it starts to become high risk. And we were like, okay, nothing's happened yet. You know, obviously, I call my mom, I call my husband. I'm like, guys, this is showtime. And then we get to the Friday morning, they don't have a bed again. We get later in the day, they still don't have a bed. My husband is then like, guys, you've told us that, you know, we need a bed, we need to get in there. And that this is a problem. Mm-hmm. We need to be prioritized. Otherwise, find us a hospital bed somewhere else. And we'll get there going. And it's all risk of infection. So, you know, we are just kind of waiting. But also at the same time, he's not in the building with me until like the visiting hours, which are the 2 hours limited. And he then came in and was then the aggressive person to say, look, we need to get you on a bed. Finally, I get a bed. I'm not that far dilated. I have a really lovely midwife. She leaves after 2 hours because her shift is over. And then I get an overnight midwife, which was nice. But they put me on the oxytocin, I think it is, which is the drip.
The love drug.
Yeah. And that is supposed to set things off. So before I got the oxytocin, they were
like... not like, you know, romantic.
No, definitely. Romantic in like the worst way possible. And they gave me they asked if I wanted an epidural, and I, by that point, obviously I couldn't handle the pain because I was already on codeine, so I was like, obviously yes, because oxytocin or Pitocin, whatever it's called, is supposed to bring on contractions like a lot stronger. It's meant to speed it up, basically. So I got an epidural from a lovely, very posh man named Casper. He came in, stuck that needle in my back, didn't even feel anything because I was already so like adrenaline or high on codeine.
Probably exhausted as well,
because, you know, you're not really sleeping.
No.
And, you know, you think like, oh, I'm being induced. Maybe in the run-up I'll be able to, like, kind of have a calm moment and, like, just rest. And I think some people can. But literally, like, the woman, like, across the way from me in the induction ward, she got induced within, like, 2 hours, and she was screaming her head off about to have the baby right there. And then the other woman next to me was, like, you know, she was very religious and kind of speaking in, like, religious tongues about God and playing sermons all night long. So there was like no time to rest. So then finally, yes, the Friday I got the Pitocin or oxytocin, whatever it's called. And because I have high blood pressure, they had to check on me every half hour. So it was my night sleep where I was supposed to be preparing. My body was opening, you know, contracting and everything.
And you just kept getting
woken up. Yeah. So I'd get into a really deep sleep for 20 minutes and then they'd come and wake me up. And then they check the baby's heart rate and they check mine and then so on and so forth. Then we got to the morning. It was like 7 a.m. and they were like, okay, ready to go. You're 10 centimeters. You're ready. You're going to do it. So then that midwife leaves. And so it's on to a new set. And they're like, okay. She's like, my shift is over here. You're two lovely midwives. And I'm like, great. They're like, wow, we've heard you're 10 centimeters dilated. Let's get going. Start pushing. So I push for 2.5 hours. Wow. And then they tell me after the 2.5 hours when nothing is happening, you know, they're kind of clearing up some poo because you do poo when you push and all that kind of stuff. Nothing's happening for 2.5 hours. And they're like, okay, let's just check. And then it turns out I was only 9 centimeters dilated. So I wasn't even near. I mean, I was near, but I wasn't where I meant to be to start pushing. So they're like, okay, we're going to put you back on the drug, the drip, and get you going. So then I got to rest finally for like an hour and a half to 2 hours. And they were like, okay, mom, we're ready to go. We're going to start doing it again.
I can't imagine what it was like for you to push for 2.5 hours.
I mean, I was so exhausted. I was literally falling asleep in between pushes because they kept saying, hold your breath as you push. And that was the most exhausting thing because, like, I wasn't getting any air to my brain. Like, I was just like, okay, I'm holding my breath, but I'm supposed to be putting all my might into, like, pushing. And so I was just doing it, and nothing was happening.
Do you remember, like, what you were thinking?
I just felt like, I was like, I don't understand how this can make logical sense that I'm holding my breath. I'm literally out of breath, but I'm pushing with everything that I have. And I was so drugged up. And I was so tired that, like, it just wasn't a head. Like, I was just like, why am I here? Like, I genuinely felt like I had left my body to, like, watch something else happen. And, I didn't get it. Like, I wasn't in the room. Like, it didn't feel like me. And so then after I'd gotten a little bit of sleep and I was finally fully dilated, I pushed for another 2.5 hours. And again, nothing was happening. And then right at the end, after that, like, 2.5 hours, maybe 2 hours and 20 minutes, it started getting bad, like red flags, like people walking in. All of a sudden, there's 15 people in the room. They pull my husband aside and they're like, we need to have a conversation right now. You've got to make a decision. This is what we have to do. I'm so drugged up. I don't really know what's going on. All I know is there's like a blur of like a sea of people in there. Everybody's down there. I have no idea. There's no dignity left. Like,
and do you remember this, or is it like the stories that you've heard?
No, I remember that I remember it being a blur and a sea of people and having like no, I was not myself. I didn't feel anything. My husband walks away to go to the bathroom because he needs a minute because he's like, I just like, that's a lot of information. I think it kind of got to a point where there was a situation where we were not going to be okay. And which is very distressing as well. And it's not like he was sleeping either in the nighttime. So, you know, that sets you into another mental health state as well as the husband who's then kind of watching
his wife
and someone who he cares about, like going through something for their family. But it's like, you don't have a relationship with this thing yet besides.
No, but you love your wife.
Yeah. So, I like in the grand scheme of things, it is something I think he probably needs to talk about as well, because it was just a very weird, distressing time. So we had to have a forcep delivery. So we got this amazing doctor who came in, and she just kind of bossed it. She was just like a strong woman, and she came in and she was like, this is what we're doing it now. Got the forceps, brought baby's head out, was like, mom, do you want to touch it? And I was like, sure. But I like didn't know. She's like, do you feel the hair? And I was like, well, at this rate, I have no idea if it's my vagina or if it's her head, but sure, yeah.
Uh-huh. It's all the same anyway.
And then they're like, one more push, you can do it. I'm like, I didn't even know I was pushing. I'm so drugged up again at this state. And then they were like, and then she came out. And that was beautiful, I guess, but I don't really know because I don't really remember it. And they put her straight onto my chest, and I was like, what has just happened? Because then I was like in another state of like, who is this? Where am I?
What's going on?
And I was excited, but I didn't feel this like sudden rush of like love that people say that you do.
I didn't feel that either. And actually, I thought I was going to feel relief. Like, because I was like, okay, like once I have this final push and he comes out and it's all over, I'm going to feel relieved and I can start on my journey. And I just remember feeling like, not feeling the relief and not really feeling anything. And then he just sort of was on my chest, and I felt like I was supposed to react to that as opposed to feeling like I reacted authentically.
Yeah.
You know, and then, I mean, I know we're going to talk about part two soon, kind of the aftermath of the birth, but I do feel like it's impacted me and my motherhood journey to have started from that point, you know, to kind of have such an expectation of how I was going to birth, to give birth, you know, this home birth, I was going to be in love. That didn't happen.
Yeah.
But then even in the hospital when I was going through everything, then I thought, right, I'm going to feel relieved and the baby's going to be there and I'm going to love him and it's going to be amazing and I can't wait to tell my friends. And that didn't happen either. You know, I sort of, it's really strange. And I But in a way, I'm sort of like, now I'm kind of not ashamed by it. In the beginning I was, but of now course. I'm thinking, how are you going to supposed to feel all of that stuff? You're really out of it. Even if you're not really on drugs, you're really out of it. From kind of all the adrenaline and all the feelings.
Yeah, no, I mean, I had to be rushed away to a surgery immediately after because I had a full tear. So they had to kind of address that right away. So,
and do you remember knowing that that was happening? Like,
I like knew, but I didn't really know because I was so drugged up. Like, I was having conversations with the anesthetist or whatever, and she was from Glasgow, and I was talking to her about the best restaurants in Glasgow, and it was like, you just had a baby, like, why are you talking about that? I just completely forgot that she like had existed and that had just happened. And it was just because the adrenaline and your hormones and like everything all kind of coming together into this like cumulative point.
And also, you're in survival mode.
You are.
And that's in that at that point, you know, so no offense to her, but your body's not thinking about her probably at that point because it's got to like, oh, shit, you know, I could die here.
Exactly. And so then I didn't have my instant connection at all. And then all of a sudden, of course, they're like, okay, your husband can stay. They wheel me back into the room. All of a sudden, you know, my husband sat there putting into this intimidating situation where he's holding a baby that's his baby for the very first time. And they're without like, just take care of it without me there. And then I get into the room and I'm like so tired. And then they're like, okay, but your husband has to leave because visiting hours are over in like half an hour. And that was it. So it was just, it just all.
So you were left, you pretty much on your own after surgery.
Yeah.
With a newborn baby.
Oh my gosh. So,
I can't imagine because I was left, but I didn't have all of that.
Yeah.
And it was exhausting just enough, you know, having just.
I was in the right headspace for it. I was on drugs. Like, you know, and yeah, fine. It was like my lower half of my body. But like the feeling didn't come back into my legs until like, I don't even know when. Like, I couldn't walk around and I had a new baby in this little cot next to me and I was supposed to fix it.
Yeah.
Anyway. That's a little bit about us. That kind of went on longer than we thought.
Yeah. About pregnancy and our birth. I mean, we could talk.
We can just always talk. Yeah, so hopefully we can talk to you guys in person one time because we'll just literally have a lot to say.
Yeah.
And we always want to hear everybody's stories because everybody's journey is so different. And I know that sounds so cliche, but like it really is. Like everybody just like, you know, there's no birth. There's no one birth that's alike. Is that a saying? That's a saying. There's like a phrase like that.
Oh, I've never heard of it.
Yeah, I know. I'm really bad at phrases. So.
It's the American in you.
Yeah.
But I have heard of like, there was one woman on my mat leave that I sort of bumped into in one of those groups, and she had the perfect water birth
with,
you know, like almost like there was music when the baby came out of her vagina because it was so beautiful.
I have a friend like that, and I just like, I commend her. I think it's so beautiful, but at the same time it made me very ashamed of my journey.
Yeah, because then you think this is something
that, and that's not her fault at all. It was just she's just perfect. I look at her now and I'm like, you're just an angel.
But the thing is, we're all perfect. There's nothing wrong that we're doing, but it can make you feel like that. It's like, oh, you know, I got preeclampsia because of my heritage or my ethnicity or because of something I didn't eat the right stuff or I didn't get enough vitamin or, you know, and it makes you think like, oh, it's me. It's, you know, because everyone tells you, oh, women have been giving birth since the dawn of time. So you keep thinking that it's me that's doing something wrong, but actually that's not it.
Mm.
You know, so we do want to hear about your birth stories.
Yeah, please, write in and let us know because we're so curious.
Yeah.
Because again, like each chapter of a book could be somebody else's birth story and it would still be a different story every time.
Yeah.
So.
But we'll be back next week with part two, the aftermath of the birth. Ooh. What happens next?
Fingers crossed you come back.
Yeah, please come back.
Do we really need you?
Okay, bye guys. Bye.